You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So first up, we have a piece by, well, about the drinkable rivers that I mentioned earlier. So we go down to Ototahi. I was lucky enough to speak to Bex on the phone. That is their project manager, about what drinkable rivers is, what it is striving to do, and opening up the conversation around rivers and providing a voice for those rivers which don't really have one that can be heard in the general conversation. I believe I started by asking what drinkable rivers is and why drinkable rivers is. What is drinkable rivers and why is drinkable rivers?
Drinkable rivers started as what's called a moonshot vision by our founder, Michael Mayle, which is a big aspirational goal that sort of declares intention. So a couple of years ago, he decided that was something he wanted to commit himself to, was to making the rivers of New Zealand, Aotearoa New Zealand, drinkable in his lifetime, without knowing specifically how to get from A to B, just knowing that that was a goal that he really wanted to commit himself to. And so ultimately, my role as project manager is to now figure out how we implement that. How do we get from where we are, which is not even swimmable in most cases, to the point where our rivers are at worst swimmable and at best drinkable? The why, I think for us, I mean, water is top of mind for everyone in New Zealand. We, you know, this country has its foundations in the idea that we have healthy waterways and beautiful coastlines, and a lot of that has degraded over the last generation or two. And for us, I think drinkable rivers' why is really around the storytelling component of our waterways. We want to use real-time data to give our rivers a voice. And I think that there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of oversimplification and a lot of blame out there in this space. And what we really want to do is just to strip all that away and make the condition of our rivers as transparent as we can and allow the information that they're giving us back to speak for itself.
Right. So when you say the information that they're giving us back, what does that mean for drinkable rivers and, or just in general, really?
The nuts and bolts of it is that we have now grounded our first real-time data sensor, which is sitting at the headwaters of the Avon near Ilam in Corff Reserve. And that device is taking real-time measurements of pH, nitrates, temperature, dissolved oxygen, conductivity, and oxidation reduction potential. Now, those key indicators give us a bunch of different information about the health of the waterway. There are also others that we can't take in real time, things like E. coli, which we know are real concerns in waterways in New Zealand, so we are taking those measurements manually. But effectively, what that information gives us back is a real-time picture of what's going into the river. Where? And so the long-term goal is that we've got this one sensor, which is where we've started and sort of declared intention, but we are hoping to have more sensors throughout the Avon River, Otakaro, and then throughout other waterways eventually as well, which can tell us exactly what's happening where in each section of waterway. Because one of the things that we've learned is that urban waterways are quite different from rural waterways in terms of what the challenges are that we're facing. And in a lot of cases, the issues facing them are very complex, and they're not the same in every area. So for us, it's really trying to get that information back so that when we start working with community groups and hopefully government to remediate specific sections of river, that we know that we're remediating the right things and we're measuring the right things.
Right. So is this a practice that is currently in use outside of drinkable rivers?
So there are a number of organizations which are taking measurements in various waterways. In Canterbury, it's namely through ECAN, but nationwide, we've got local councils will be doing their own version, and NIWA. Generally speaking, their measurements are incredibly high quality, but typically low volume. So they're taking really, really great, really accurate measurements, but not terribly often. And so what we're trying to do is to get we're currently calibrating the data that we're getting back to ensure that it's as robust as we can possibly make it so that we've got that credibility behind the data. But also for us, it's really a matter of frequency. So right now we're taking hourly measurements from that first sensor, but we're actually looking to get that frequency increase to every 15 minutes. So say we've got a stormwater event that happens, we can tell you in real time exactly what's happening in our waterways as a result of that event.
Wow. So A, how important is that? And B, how do you do that? How do we up the frequency of kind of getting this real-time data on our rivers and streams?
Sure. I mean, for us, the frequency is, upping that frequency is actually just a matter of us working with our developer to get the device. Largely, it's a matter of battery power, if anything. So the more measurements we're taking, the more battery power we're drawing from the device, which is solar powered. So that's a factor for us to consider. We need to balance, can we actually take as many measurements as we like with the amount of power that we're able to get in through the solar panel on that device? But I mean, how important is that? I think was the other question. And I think critically important. I think we've got a lot of different organizations giving us different sort of thresholds and measurements for guidelines and advice about what is sort of safe for swimming, what is safe for contact but not swimming, what is safe for drinking, so on. And I think for us, it's really just a matter of complete transparency and, as I say, telling that story. So if you're taking really, really great measurements half a dozen times a year, that's not really giving a complete picture of what's going on. And even the measurements we take in our swimming areas, for instance, if you take a measurement one day that says that an area that has been identified as an area that is quite valuable for swimming and water activity, you can take a measurement one day that says that's safe, but if there's a stormwater event later on in that day, it may no longer be safe. And so it's really, really important to us to try and get that information coming back through as quickly as possible and being displayed to as wide an audience as possible. So for us, one of the things, the big push in the next few months is for us to get, so we've sort of got a version 1.0 of this data being displayed on the Drinkable Rivers website, and we're really trying to upgrade that so that we've got that real-time data pulling through automatically, and we've got it telling a really compelling story to as wide an audience as we can. So we've got the real nuts and bolts data for people who want to actually get in and analyze it, but we've also got an interpretation of that data, which people who are living in the area can look at without a great deal of scientific knowledge behind them and understand what it means.
Certainly. I was going to say, how would you ideally broadcast these stories or tell these stories, especially to the communities in which the rivers run through?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, one of the things that's in development for us and will be for some time is the sort of wider spread of this initiative. So we are focusing on a pilot section in our first year, which we referred to as Riverhood 1. So that's a section in Corfe Reserve at the head of the Avon, which is approximately 110 meters from where the springs come through until our first data sensor, where it's grounded, is picking up the measurements. And so we're trying to have an ongoing engagement strategy with the people that live in that area through local events, through door knocking, through information sharing, to just let them know some of the information about what we're doing in that area, some of the things that we've determined as potential areas for improvement and remediation. One of the other things that we're in development on at the moment is, how do we get schools engaged with this as kaitiaki for sections of rivers? So we're looking at developing a program with a school in that first catchment area to help us with a riparian planting strategy and landscaping in that area as a first-line support to stop contaminants getting into that section of river. So that really helps us kind of get that message out as well. But the longer-term goal, is that we have got sensors of this kind in a number of places that are giving a really clear picture of, even as water travels down the river. So if we've got, say, four sensors in the Avon from the top to the tail in the estuary, you can actually see water events in real time as they're happening, as stormwater pushes contaminants into the river in a certain area, and then those measurements are getting picked up at each sensor. And for us, the hub of that really will be, for the immediate term, our website. So as I say, that's a huge focus for us, is to really develop that dashboard and to get that to a place where it's telling a really, really compelling story. But there are a range of other applications that we're looking at for how exactly we display that data, and also how do we use other readily available data, things like weather patterns and traffic patterns, to inform what's happening and the measurements that we're taking.
Certainly. So what is the current story that's being told in the Avon?
There are a couple of key contaminants that we know are causing significant challenges in the rivers in Canterbury. So E. coli is definitely a big one, and that is quite a complex issue that involves native bird life, dog fouling. There's a number of things that actually contribute to that. There's also nitrates is one that is really top of mind and everybody's aware of, which is largely being contributed by fertilizers. But we also have some interesting metals that are of concern in Christchurch rivers. So we've got iron and zinc, which are largely coming off either off of our roads or off of our roofs. And another really big one in Christchurch is sediment, case in a lot of places elsewhere in the country as well. So that can be anything. That can be heavy metals. That can be concrete dust from construction sites. But it's physical sediment that's been washed into the river. And that, for us, is another one that's really challenging.
Certainly. So once we have this story being told, where do we go with the information that we've learned from the story?
So I think for us, the key thing is to try and make the community engaged by making them hopeful. So I think for me personally, one of the things that I believe in is a concept that I call relentless incrementalism, right? Which is the idea that if everybody makes small changes and small improvements in the way that they're interacting with their lives and with their environment, that we can actually make big and meaningful change. So one of the practical ways that we are looking at dealing with that is if you go to the Drinkable Rivers website, there's actually a section on there that says 5 things you can do today, which are just practical tips for anybody who lives in the community to improve their interaction with their local waterways. And as we learn more from the groups that are already doing this amazing work in Canterbury and beyond, then we'll continue to add to that list, because I think it's really important for us to look at how we're framing this dialogue, right? So one of the things that Drinkable Rivers, sort of one of our key values, is to try and get everyone on the same side of this discussion. We found that there's a lot of stone throwing between rural and urban rivers and trying to say whose fault it is. And really what we need to do is get everyone on one side fighting for our waterways. So really for us, the data and the storytelling element is the thing that drives the community engagement, and it gives people the information that they need to make those incremental changes in their lives that can help their waterways. It also helps us on a much larger scale take that information back to big business and government and say, look, we can actually tell you in real time what's happening here, and we need your help to fix it on a larger scale.
Amazing. One last question. If people want to get involved or kind of help spread these narratives of our rivers, how can they do that?
So the best way to get involved is probably just to head to our website, drinkablerivers.nz. There's a whole range of information there. There's also links if you want to volunteer or if you have any expertise that you can lend to us. One of the things that we try always to be really clear about is that we are not experts. We are not water scientists. We are not data specialists. We see ourselves as champions for the people who are already doing amazing work, as well as catalysts to try and bring some of these incredible initiatives together. So if you head to the Drinkable Rivers website, you'll get, as I say, those 5 tips for something you can do today, as well as links to how you could volunteer with us or how you can help us learn more about amazing initiatives that are happening in your area and how we can help promote your events and the work that you're doing. Because I think we acknowledge that we're relatively new in this space and that there is so much great work being done. So our objective really is to try and help the people who are already working in this space. So yeah, reach out to us if you can help and let us know if we can help you.
Amazing. Thank you so much for talking to us today. This will go to air at 12-ish and I will flick through a podcast link afterwards. I've got to sadly...
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.